This program is brought to you by PrideNZ.com.
Dana, the wonderful Dana. Dana and myself, we were in a show that Phil wrote, and I'll tell you what, I have some tales to tell. Dana's even got better ones. How you, love? Just that's all right. I'll drop a gear occasionally.
Lovely to see you.
Lovely to see you again.
Thank you very much.
Okay, I'll present Dana to you.
Thank you.
Right.
Kia ora, everybody. As you've just heard, my name's Dana DeMilo. I was not here for law reform. I was already in Australia. I ran away. Times were so tough. I went to school in the 40s and 50s. I was beaten up because I am who I am and I've never been any different. So, of course, I stuck out like dogs, what's names. So, and I was 5'2" in the primers, so you can imagine, you know. But then I ran away in 1960 from home because I never thought my mother would accept me. My father had passed, not just the year before. I never thought my mother would accept me, you see, because that was the only thing that I got a hiding for, that she really gave me a hiding all the time for dressing up and being who I was. And yet the rest of the family, I had no brothers and sisters, but aunties and uncles and everything, all had wardrobes for me, you know, with ball gowns and wedding gowns and everything. Everyone accepted it except my mum. And later in life, she told me the reason why. She knew nothing. We're talking 50s, and obviously I was trans, you know. And she said, the thing is that you, and I forgave her immediately. She said, no mother wants to see her child pointed at, laughed at, beaten up. And I said, well, Mum, that's exactly what happened to me. And she said, yes, I know. Fran had just said about people calling gay men pedophiles. They called us pedophiles. A guy got out of a car and ran up to me before the Cuban Mall was in and beat me, and he was beating me, and he's saying, it's dirty so-and-sos like you that interfere with my young brother. And all I could think of to answer was, I want to be hurt, not tickled. And he was so shocked at what I said that he stopped beating me up. But that's all I could think of, you know, because young boys don't interest people like me, you know what I mean? And I was always harassed by a police sergeant, and he did nothing, but, and I never knew until many years later that he also used to pick on other people I knew and harass them. Every night he would pick me up and he would say, get in the car. And I'd say, but why? I've done nothing. He'd say, get in the car now. And I said, but I've done nothing wrong. If you don't get in the car, I'll arrest you for hampering a policeman in his line of duty. And then he would make the driver drive off at like 80 miles an hour, and there was no seatbelts. And he knew your little Achilles heel because he was such a nasty person, you know, and he knew I hated speed unless I was in control of it. And it would speed all round, and then he'd drive into and make him drive into an alleyway, turn on the lights, and then he'd say, and you're in an alleyway and it's dark, and when you turn on the inside lights, the windows become mirrors, and he'd say, look at you, you effing this, and the words I'd never heard, like shirtlifter, and I can't repeat the words he used to say to me, and then he would push my face into the window until I swore or said pig or whatever, and he'd go, gotcha. So then he'd take me down to Taranaki Police Station, and he would make me undress and dress, because he knew it embarrassed me and the tears would just roll. He would make me dress and undress for everyone that worked there. Then I would fall asleep, and he would make it his business when the next shift came on that he would wake me up and do the same thing all over again. He would wait for me to come out of the hotel and go into the toilet and arrest me for using the woman's toilet. I mean, there was a running joke that Scully, who was a well-known judge that was very anti-crims and everything, never put me in jail. And he called me into his camera once and he said, for goodness sake, Dana, he said, I can't keep finding you, you know, you're going to have to stop going into the woman's toilet. And I said, where am I going to go? He said, well, you can't go to the men's. I said, well, what am I supposed to do? He said, maybe a bottle. I said, in the miniskirt. And it was a bit of a joke because he never ever put me in jail because he understood me, you know. But I'm just one that was treated like that. We all come from one place, we all walk different roads, but we all end up in the same place. And we are all whānau, we are all family. And I'd like to now introduce someone that was a trailblazer into the parliament and a mayor, and who came along just as I left, and she can talk more about the law reform. Thank you very much for asking me, I'm very honoured. Thank you.
Kia ora tātou katoa, my name is Georgina Beyer, and yes, I have walked these halls of fame, aren't they? halls of power, aren't they, Trevor? Homosexual law reform, 1986. Well, in 1984-85, I had just moved from Wellington to Auckland. So I was busy being a drag diva at Alfie's nightclub in Auckland in the Bloomers show, for those of you who may have come across us at that time. If you do, it ages you. Why I mention this is because any activism that I became involved with regarding law reform happened in Auckland, because I was working for a trio of partners who owned the Alfie's nightclub. Namely Brett Shepherd and Tony Kadovich and his partner John. They owned Alfie's nightclub, but they also had a gay publication, which was rare in New Zealand at those times. And for Fran and for Bill and for all of the activists that were spearheading from down here, that kind of outreach was important. When Fran mentioned about getting into the provinces and places like that, if any gay people were out there and had some sort of access to a gay media, it would be Out magazine. There was at least one other, I can't recall its name, publication. Pink Triangle, that's right, that also helped. But Brett Shepherd certainly became a great advocate in Auckland. So fundraising, awareness raising, rallies, anything he could do through the nightclub or their other businesses that were gay-friendly was very helpful in trying to bring the community together, because we hadn't been a together community, rainbow community. But this one cause celeb was pushing people together to act cooperatively regardless of differences of opinion, because the principle was right. We need and must have equality and human rights, and this was a stepping stone toward it. So we did that in the nightclub scene up in Auckland. But at the same time, I also happened to be fortunately working with one of our great gay filmmaking and writing icons, Peter Wells. And he and his colleague, Stuart Main, were making a short film as part of a drama series that was going on television. Now, not many of our real lives were expressed in television in New Zealand in those days, beaming into the households of the nation. But in this series, there were at least two short films that were going to touch on a subject matter almost foreign and unheard of in New Zealand. One of them was a short film called My First Suit, which was about a young 14-year-old discovering his homosexual tendencies. That was fine. The other film was a short film called Jules Dahl. And Jules Dahl was a film about a day in the life of a transvestite and a transsexual. And I had the honour of playing the co-star role of Jewel in that film. And it had an awful lot of trouble once it was about ready to go to air for actually getting on air, because the censor of the day decided that the subject matter was contrary to the public's good taste. And therefore it held up an entire series of six short dramas that were going on our featured Sunday night drama slot on TV. We only had three channels in those days. And so there was a great to-do about it until I think Julian Mounter, who was the head of television or something at the time, came along and
managed to get it to go on air. Why was it contrary to the public's good taste? Because the main characters in this short film was a transvestite and a transsexual. And not one bedroom scene with sex involved happened in this film or anything. I mean, you would look back at that and think that that is ridiculous and just idiot these days. In that film, we managed to ad-lib a scene that stands there enshrined in celluloid to this very day, in which the two main characters ambushed the Salvation Army, who were marching down Queen Street to go and have their prayer rally in Victoria Street on a Sunday night. And me and my co-star dashed out in front of, this is at director's instructions, totally offhand and ad-lib, rushed out in front of them and mockingly marched down Queen Street in front of the Salvation Army with all their, tambourines going and the hats and the trombones and everything like that. The sergeant of the Salvation Army was very displeased and went and had words with Peter Wells, the director, about this, and said they were going to be suing them and you can't put this on TV and we'll have you, you know, we've got our eye on you. And then Peter asked us, again, ad lib, if we could just go and stand so we could get a cutaway shot, for us to go, me and Mandy, to go and stand next to the Salvation Army while they're having their prayer meeting, which we did, mockingly standing there, you know, joining them. So this was our little protest in the film that lasts to this day to remind us of those who were a Guinness badly. And also, finally, in the last shot of that film, Mandy and my character walk away from the camera and the director instructed me to just ad-lib a few lines to sort of wind it up. We're walking away into the distance. So I couldn't help but say to my co-star in that scene, have I ever told you about the time I met this guy called Norm Jones? He was down on the street and got that little dig in there because Norm Jones was a vehement opponent of homosexual law reform, along with Jeff Braybrook and the Labour Party, who I later served in the caucus with for a wee while. And I think I softened old Jeff down by the time he retired. So I'm being given up the wind-up. There's an awful lot that we could talk about. But suffice to say that the opportunities that opened up to all of us, but certainly the likes of me in years to come, from the beginning with homosexual law reform and the vital and important human rights amendments in 1993 that then became all-inclusive, assisted me greatly to seek out a career in politics at local government and central government level when they presented themselves. And although I had to deal with an awful lot of, transgender, transsexual sort of stuff thrown at me, along with my very colourful past, at the end of the day, we have noted since homosexual law reform that while there is improvement to still come, that we have an attitudinal change in this country where we have won the hearts and minds of fair-minded New Zealanders, and Lewis's marriage equality bill certainly showed us that. And that was only a short, not even 10 years after civil unions and the resurgence of all that venal rhetoric that we heard back in the time of law reform. We've nailed it, people, in winning respect in this country, and that's what we needed to earn, and we have earned it very well. It was helped along at the time, coincidentally with law reform, that HIV and AIDS was succumbing to the world, and we were having to take that on. And the way the gay community cooperated with the non-gay community in this country to address that issue, which was of some vital importance to all of us, helped us share the respect between each other and learn a hell of a lot more than people knew before about who we really are. And who we are positive participants in our society, and we must continue to demand the equality in this nation that this nation has given us to date. Thank you. Now, you know, you can have our show ponies in our kind of game that are out here all the time, but people who are out and proud all their lives, and certainly through all their working lives, and who include us in that life, is one way to describe our next speaker. Malcolm Vaughan has been an institution in the Wellington hospitality scene for more than 30 years. I have known him most of my girl life. He knew me when I was a boy for a wee while. And we used to be flatmates together, and we have done some ridiculous things together. But we have always been strong together, and we've been through the ups and downs of the roller coaster of our lives as rainbow people in this country. So would you please give a warm welcome to the lectern, to one of the greatest men who have helped our community through fundraising, through support, through advocacy, through visibility, and through providing us venues where we can be who we are. Welcome Malcolm Vaughan to the lectern, please.
Well, I can tell you she's a pretty hard act to follow. She really is. I always said earlier on, I was telling somebody earlier on this afternoon that, you know, Georgina is a great speaker, but she's one of those ones that you need to give her a microphone with a cord on it so you can fucking pull her off stage. I'm supposed to be standing here this evening telling you about what it's my life has been like with hospitality and providing for the gay community and paying acknowledgement to some people that are no longer with us tonight. I've slightly done a little bit of a diatribe from that. I was going to speak free-heartedly, as I thought it would be more natural. Then I got to work this afternoon, and I thought, no, I better write down a few notes. So I have 7 pages of notes, okay? But I'm a little bit older now, and I thought, well, I'll just write big, so I don't have to get out my reading glasses and show my age. 30 years of law reform, who would have thought? I never thought that I would see exactly where we are today. Growing up in the Hutt Valley as a young teenager and going to one of the roughest schools, Tyta College, and knowing that you were different was not easy. It was not easy at all. Homophobia was prevalent. There was one thing wrong with me. I liked boys. When I turned 15, I rocketed out of school and hit the bright lights of Wellington. My life changed. Really, really changed. There were no nightclubs, no gay venues, nothing like that. There were places like the Bistro Bar and the Tavern Bar. And we used to do ourselves up so we could sneak in there. It was great. Tavern Bar had 2 exits. You saw the cops coming, you motored through one and motored out the other. Then you ran through upstairs to the Toledo Bar, waited till the cops left, and then you'd go back down there again. I did a few jobs. I ran away to sea when I was 18 years of age and I joined the Merchant Navy. I learnt a lot. I learnt a lot about myself. I met a lot of people of my ilk that were the same as me. Eventually I came ashore. I worked with a fantastic boy called George in the old Royal Oak Hotel at one stage. George was a night porter and I was a waiter in the Oaks coffee shop. We got on fantastically. We lived with the maitre d's, I should say, of the coffee bar, Carol, and a male dancer and stripper, Rion. We all lived together up in Buller Street. And George and I, after work in those days, it was 11 o'clock closing time, George and I would leave our job at the Royal Oak Hotel. We'd scooter up to Buller Street where we lived. Quickly throw on the drag, the hot pants, the holding next to high heels, and down to Carmen's, down in Vivian Street. Georgie scored a job, and I'll never forget it. Her first gig was wearing this yellow and black Marlene Dietrich dress. She hated it. But she soon became a star there. So everybody would go up to the Club Exotic, then down to Carmen's. Our lives changed dramatically. Eventually, we discovered there was a place for people like us. And that was the Dorian Society in Lambton Quay. Amazing place. A group of men got together. They opened up a gay club. Very discreet. Men only. Unlicensed. Open to 10 o'clock at night. $4 to get in the door. Singles only and beer from the fridge. Every member paid a membership per year. We all had a key to get in the door. We climbed 3 flights of stairs. Then we had to bang on a door or ring the bell. The curtain would come back. Oh yes, you're a member, you can come in. We had a great time. The club got raided quite a bit by the police, unlicensed, but it survived. Over the year it grew. We moved to Willis Street. It was fantastic. It was surviving well. And as Georgie mentioned, then Alfie's came to town from Auckland and opened Alfie's nightclub in Wellington. Wellington's first official, legal, gay and lesbian nightclub. Something that was dedicated just to the gay and lesbian people. It was just for them and about them. And as Georgie mentioned, she had the Fabulous Bloomers review in Auckland. Brett Shepherd, Tony Katovich and his partner John, they would fly the girls down. They gave us a space and a place to be who we were. It was fantastic. It was really, really fantastic. Suddenly I felt I had a place. I belonged. I belonged in society, our society. We had somewhere truly tremendous to go. Somebody actually cared about us. Homosexual law reform, gay liberation, it was all raising its head. Homosexual law reform was going. Franz Bull was in. Bull Logan, fantastic. Gentleman who worked so hard with Fran, made it possible for all of us. He would organise every meeting. Norman Jones, Jeff Raybook. I remember going out to Knox Church in Lower Hutt, and the hatred. These people were supposed to be Christians. We were the scum of the earth. Kill a queer for Christ. Kick them back to the gutter where they come from. They were the war cries. It was horrible. It was not a nice time to grow up. If this bill and all of these people that put this bill together worked so hard, Fran Wild, Gavin Young, Pink Triangle was on the scene, Trevor Mallard, all of these fantastic people that gave us an opportunity and made it possible for all of us to be where we were today. People like Alison Laurie, Bill Logan, Ewan Painter, Graham Russell, who was working on it full time, unpaid. Where would we be today without these people? These were the dream weavers, Tony Katovich, Brett Shepherd, his partner John, Bill Logan, Alison Laurie, all of these people, Ewan Painter. Where would we be today if we didn't have these people? I can honestly say, as a young man growing up, I learnt a lot. I thank you for everything that you've done for us as gay men. I thank the lesbian community for standing there and being behind it and helping us to get where we were there, to get us where we wanted to be. Des, as been mentioned, was running HUG, Heterosexuals Unafraid of Gays. I've got to tell you right now, I did have my suspicions about Des. I thought, if he doesn't come out of that closet soon, Nani's going to get him first. What I'm really trying to say is that we have lived a hard life, but it's been fantastic to get where we are 30 years later, and we would not be here today if it wasn't for all these dreamweavers, the people that made it possible. And I really would like you all to put your hands together and thank this amazing group of people. My husband and I have to apologise, Scotty couldn't be here tonight. We do have a function back at the bar, which is involved with the comedy club, and so he had to shoot away for that, so I do apologise for that. He made sure, he said, please apologise for me, and I said, yes, I will. So we have done that. And of course you are, I'm going to get a plug in here, you are all invited back there later on. We've got a fantastic, nice little DJ downstairs all the way from Korea. He's absolutely beautiful. He came to us in the bar and said, I play in gay nightclub in Korea, and I want to play in your bar. I play for nothing. And I went, nobody plays for nothing. Nobody works for nothing. And on that I mean everybody, every one of you, every one of you. You all worked for nothing. You made it possible for us to be who we are today, and now society's changed because of your hard efforts. Where would we be today without our dream weavers? Thank you, Alison. Thank you, Larissa. Thank you, Georgina. Thank you, everybody. Fran, Gavin, Bill, thank you. Thank you for your time.
My loves, I would like you to give a huge round of applause for our next guest speaker, Cassie. Can we do that? Where are you, Cassie? So, Cassie is part of our new generation of gay community. She's going to give it a little fai corridor, which will only actually be 5 minutes exactly. Thank you. And Fetu is coming as well. Ladies and gentlemen, they are the makers and shakers for today. Huge round of applause for our youth!
Tēnā koutou katoa. Tēnā koe ki te papa, ki te whanganui atara. Tēnā koe ki te whare, ki ngā tangata, ki te wairua. Ngā mate o tēnā iwi, o tēnā iwi, mimihia, mitangihia, moe mai rā, e rangatira mā. Tēnā koutou ki ngā tipuna, o te moana nui ākiwa. Tēnā koutou ki ngā rangatira, kei roto i te whare i tēnei pō. Tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā tātou katoa. I just want to start by greeting our land here of Te Whanganui Atara. I want to greet this house. I want to greet the people of this house and the wairua of this house as well. I want to greet everybody who has already passed our tupuna, everybody who has come before us. I want to greet everyone who is here today and everyone who you bring with you into this room here. Thank you. I want to thank the organisers and I want to thank all of the people who we have heard tonight already. My name is Cassie and also I want to acknowledge that I am speaking here tonight with Fitua Lemoana, who might have been next in the programme, but actually we are joining our kōrero here today. So I guess the concept for what we were speaking, because it's quite intimidating coming up in this space in front of all of these amazing people who have paved the way for where we've been, and me standing here at 26 and not even being alive when this happened, I think, you know, that's quite an intimidating thing to do. One of the things that we really thought about and what we drew a strange inspiration from was the octopus, actually. And it's quite relevant because do many people know of the story of Kupe and Te Whiki? Aye? So in Te Whanganui Atara, Kupe actually travelled from Hawaiki following a giant octopus who had grieved him. And Kupe followed this octopus, Te Whiki or Muturangi, all the way across the Pacific Ocean, and then it was his partner who then said, oh, the land of the long white cloud, Aotearoa. A woman who named this beautiful country of ours, quite important. Now, this is just one story, but what did happen is that Te Whiki, this giant octopus, there was a showdown, and across all of these different places, from Castle Point, from Te Whanganui Atara to the Cook Strait, and finally the battle took place at the top of the South Island in Totoranui. So I just want to acknowledge that were it not for that whiki, were it not for that octopus, then Kupe wouldn't have made the journey and brought many other of his whanaunga here to settle on this land. So I wanted to acknowledge that.
Sife, sife, fau lau fau sa, fau lau fau sa, fau ya tele. Sife, sife, fau lau fau sa, fau lau fau sa fau ya tele si fe si fe fau lau fau sa fau lau fau sa fau ya tele.
The song that we are singing, this chant, which is a Samoan chant, is talking about building a fire on an octopus, actually. If you want to know more, we can tell you later. And what we want to talk about here today is building a fire. So right now, we know, even though there have been people who have traversed across difficult times, we still feel like there is a problem that runs deep within our society and deep within our communities, and we still feel it. We feel it in many different places. It is multifaceted, like the octopus. It is about teen suicide. It is about racism. It is about trans people within our prisons still to this day. It is many, many things. And we want to light a fire to illuminate that. So when we can see the problem, we can start to solve the problem. As Elizabeth and many before us have told us, we must acknowledge that our Pacific and Indigenous peoples have lived in these islands for many, many years before us. We have existed forever. We have existed before Europeans colonised our lands and made laws that then said we were not right and that we are unnatural. We cannot forget where these laws have come from. But we know that in our hearts, in our minds, where we stand, we are right and we're correct in what we continue to do. Last week, I must acknowledge that one of our young people who could have been in here in this room today passed away due to suicide. This is not something that has just finished and we leave, as many people have mentioned here today. So I think it's really important that us as Pacific peoples, as Indigenous peoples, continue to come together and to build so we can illuminate what we're doing and we can work for a better world. What we are saying is that there is a fire, there is a distant fire, and there is a fire that is still burning within many of us. But we want to say we can't just be afraid of that fire. It has in it the good and it has in it the bad. So just like Te Whiki o Muturangi, when the octopus came over here, it was of course a bad thing that was going on, but at the same time it was a good omen. It brought people over to our country here today and continued to pave the way for what the Aotearoa that we have. So what we want to do here today is we want to offer this fire. We cannot hold the grief of our communities, our Pacific and our Indigenous communities, any longer. And what we want to do is we want to pass it on. And we want to leave that here. And it's nothing to be afraid of. It's okay. It's fine. But we want to continue to work together to keep illuminating and, in the end of the day, make this place a safer place for our people. I would now like to introduce Bella Simpson to come up. I've known Bella for quite a few years. She's an amazing young human being who is creating real change within her communities. I don't want to get into this whole brave and courageous people. However, I think that Bella absolutely fits within this bill, and I have a lot of love and respect for her.
Hello, everybody. My name's Bella, and I'm 19. When I was 11, I came out as a young trans woman. And so I've been through primary, intermediate, and high school as a trans woman. So firstly, I just wanted to say thank you to all those that fought so hard 30 years ago. I wasn't born yet. It was like 10 years before I was born, so it's a while ago. It's really awesome that we can come together and celebrate such great things as a community. But it's also important to remember that this isn't the end of the road. We need to remember those in our community that don't get a voice, whose identity is often ignored. I could stand here for hours and list off identities that we haven't even mentioned this evening, but there just isn't enough time. I've already been asked to condense my speech, but, you know, that ain't happening. So the one community that I do worry about, because I'm involved in it, is the trans community. 1 in 5 young trans people are attempting suicide every year. These numbers are way too high. This isn't okay. These young people are not feeling safe, supported, respected, or heard. Myself and a good friend of mine have been working for the Proud Conference this week to get youth opinions on the serious issues within our community. We've run workshops in Auckland and Wellington, and we did a survey online. We had over 100 responses, both online and in person, and I'd love to stand here and say that these young people are feeling great with no issues, but they aren't. The amount of young people who feel like their gender identity is invalid and ignored is deeply upsetting. What's more upsetting is that they aren't just feeling this way at home or even in school, but it comes from the media and within our own community. Young gender diverse people just are not feeling like they're represented in this community. It worries me because I've often had these dark thoughts, feeling like my identity is invalid and being ignored and that I'm being tokenized by my school, and feeling like I was the only trans person. But the truth is, I'm not alone. There are hundreds of young trans people who are finding the confidence to be themselves. I'm lucky. I've always had a strong support system behind me. But think of those who don't. These days, when a young person comes out as gay, there'll be some stigma and a hint of bullying. But most people will be like, oh, that's great, you're so brave, congrats. But when a young trans person comes out, they're constantly having to educate others, including their teachers. They're having to deal with questions that no one should have to deal with. They're having to be out and proud and fight the discrimination. But it's funny, really, because this week I had a bit of a breakdown, because my entire Pride Week includes attending events and conferences to speak up about young trans people and the issues that they're facing. I have the support to get me through this, and I don't mind doing it. But as long as in the future things start to change, because it isn't fair that we keep putting all this responsibility onto our young trans community. And it makes it sound like it's just me, but the reality is just about every young trans person feels like they have to do this. And this is a huge weight they shouldn't have to carry. And I think it all really hit me when I saw my endocrinologist in January, and he said to me, I'm really sorry you haven't been able to be a normal teenager. And that took me by surprise because I never thought about it like that. Over the school holidays when I was younger, the other kids in my class would hang out, go to the beach, have sleepovers. I'd be off to a hui or a conference or running a workshop educating others. Just, you know, simple teenage things. But as a community, we have a responsibility to change this so no one else gets left behind. Like what Lilo said to Stitch in Lilo and Stitch, Ohana means family. Family means nobody gets left behind. But it's enough for me, and someone who's done some really amazing work and has been recognised by the Queen is Tabby for setting up Inside Out. She's a national coordinator, and she's been doing some really amazing work, so I'll pass it over to her. Thanks.
And I'd also like to acknowledge all of those who have gone before us, who have paved the way for us all to be standing here celebrating the 30th anniversary of homosexual law reform in Aotearoa. I feel so lucky to have been born in the 90s after that bill passed and to have grown up in a time where people in New Zealand are free to live out their relationships openly, free of that legal persecution, and I'm really, really grateful for that and for all the stories that have been shared tonight, which I think, especially us in the younger community, we don't get to hear those, so it's just incredible to have that opportunity to really hear about, you know, how this happened and how we are standing, where we're standing. I went to the first high school that we're aware of in the Asia Pacific region to have a Queer Straight Alliance group, and that completely changed my experience of understanding my sexuality and being able to come out and be open about it, because I was in an environment that for the most part accepted my kind of diversity. So now I work for Inside Out, where our vision is to make sure every young person of a diverse sexuality, sex or gender in Aotearoa has a sense of belonging and safety in their community and school. Inside Out and our team of volunteers work tirelessly to make change happen, as do other groups all around the country and in Wellington. We're working so that the young people growing up now don't have to face the same struggles that we did, just like many of our elders did for us. We want them to have it better. In the last 5 years since I've left high school, we've already seen huge changes. Almost every region in Aotearoa now has a queer youth group supporting young people in their communities. Half the schools in Wellington and an estimated probably about 60 around the country have Queer Straight Alliance groups working to create that support in their schools. Marriage equality passed. Work is being done in Auckland at the moment, which is hopefully going to result in the first kind of trans health clinic in New Zealand. Hopefully that will be the first of many. Statistics on gender diverse people are starting to be collected. We might even make it into the census. All of that stuff is huge and it's happening in our lifetime, which is really, really exciting. But as we know, it's not enough. In the last 10 years, there has been no change in relation to the amount of bullying young people of diverse sexualities, sexes and genders face in high schools. 10 years is a long time to see no change. 1 in 5 young people in our community are being bullied on at least a weekly basis, and within that group, over 43% are actually receiving physical violence as part of that bullying. And it's just really sad, because those aren't just shocking statistics, those are real stories of young people that we work with. And largely in Aotearoa, it's young people that are supporting other young people, like others before me have said. And we're doing a pretty incredible job, but without proper support and resourcing, it's going to continue to be a very slow change. We need a whole community approach to see things moving faster. I also want to take a moment to acknowledge a part of our community that hasn't been spoken about tonight, with the exception of at the very beginning when Elizabeth acknowledged biphobia in our communities. I want to give a shout out to all those bisexual, pansexual, polysexual, fluid, queer people, all of those who don't fit neatly into the boxes of straight or gay and lesbian.
Thank you, Sammy.
Did you know that the first Pride March was actually started and organised by bisexual women in New York to commemorate the Stonewall riots a year later? I'd love to hear the stories of bisexual people who were here supporting homosexual law reform in New Zealand, but I don't know of anybody to acknowledge, because those, Kay Jones, thank you, those stories aren't being told. Bisexual people or those attracted to more than one gender have been here from the beginning, yet we still have to fight to be acknowledged. 46 years ago since that first Pride March and 30 years on from homosexual law reform in New Zealand. Bisexual people are some of the most at-risk and vulnerable people in our communities across the gender spectrum, many facing high rates of discrimination, depression, anxiety, substance abuse, and intimate partner and sexual violence. Bisexual people are too often erased and forgotten when we talk about our rainbow communities. Biphobia is perpetrated from people within our communities. This can look like denying bi people access to spaces, questioning their identities, invalidating their sexuality, and continuing to spread negative stereotypes. I think 2016 is the time to put an end to that and to make sure those of us in the middle of the sexuality continuum are included. When you talk about homophobia and transphobia, we need to be talking about biphobia too, and it is a specific and different kind of discrimination. I wanted to thank the Wellington Bisexual Women's Group, because we know that Wellington Pride is actually doing a great job of having bi visibility thanks to that group. There's a bi-friendly picnic happening next Sunday, is by films, research and workshops being presented in the ILGA Oceania Human Rights Conference. It makes such a difference to feel seen and have these actively included, but it needs to be an effort coming from our entire rainbow community, not those of us from this identity constantly trying to push our way in. And I think this really extends to other marginalised groups too. Do asexual, aromantic, intersex, takatāpui or genderqueer people feel included, respect and part of pride, part of our communities? I don't know. There is no pride for some of us without liberation for all of us, said Marsha P. Johnson, one of the activists who took part in the Stonewall riots. I think her words are still true to this day. It is important to come together and celebrate our successes as long as we're not forgetting the struggles many of our rainbow communities are still facing and fighting, as long as we don't leave them behind. I look forward to seeing where we are in 5 years' time, another 30 years' time, and I hope that we can say our community really did that together across generations, raising up our most vulnerable and fighting for their struggles too. I would now like to invite Marnie Bruce Mitchell to speak. Marnie is the founder and executive director of ITANS, the Intersex Trust Aotearoa New Zealand, and one of few international activists in the world. Marnie has been an incredible treasure to our community and has particularly gone out of their way to support our youth organisations. So please welcome Marnie. Thank you.
Kia ora, whānau. I know it's been a marathon night tonight, so we're getting towards the end. It's a privilege to have my fellow ILGA supporter, board member with me, and I'll introduce Rawa shortly. So fellow human beings, it's indeed a great privilege and an honour to be with you all tonight. This country kid from the King Country, a small remote sheep and cattle farm in a valley called Kurikau. Yes, my name is Marnie Bruce Mitchell. Yes, I'm an intersex person, and I'm feeling the responsibility for holding this mahi tonight. I've been, since my late teens, a queer-identified person. Came out as a young teacher, as a lesbian, in Whanganui more than 40 years ago. I was at the time teaching up the river at Ranana. Would travel down the river road to the then secret group meetings in Whanganui at Terry and George's place. I've been racking my brains. How did I even find the group? No Google, no internet, and homosexuality, as it was known then, was a criminal activity. What I do remember is how wonderful and how important it was to find that group. I felt like I'd found family. I remember the warm welcome I got there. I also remember going to functions in Palmerston North, the cars splitting up, driving round the block, checking to make sure we were not being tailed. The fear, the pragmatism, and the plain old-fashioned guts that those meetings, support and social functions involved in those days. I also remember, and it's been referred to tonight, the bigotry and hate that surfaced and was given visible voice during the time leading up to the passing of the Homosexual Law Reform Act. It was wonderful and slightly astonishing that tonight we are gathered here in the Beehive to mark this historic event. Have an opportunity to reflect, to remember all the people that were involved in the process of decriminalisation. So my own story. 20 years ago, 1996, I travelled to America to attend the world's first ever retreat for intersex people, 9 Americans and myself representing the world. At that point, I'd changed my name to Marnie, was identifying as and speaking about being a non-binary, queer-identified intersex person. It was this retreat that people organised that gave birth to the modern intersex movement. Before I go further, an explanation. What is intersex? Intersex is an umbrella term describing the people with born with variations of internal and external sex anatomy, resulting in bodies that can't be classified as the typical male or female. We're usually taught that sex is merely black and white, male or female. That's simply not true. There are a lot of awesome grey areas in the middle that could make someone intersex. Prevalence. 1 in 2,000 live births. Or to create a visual image, the same number of people who are naturally born redheads. As an aside, I had brown hair and my 3 siblings and my mum all had red hair. For the last 60 years, people who are born and identified intersex have been treated under a pathologising medical model that sees the world in very black and white, no grey ways. A model that has seen our sex and our bodies normalised with surgery and or the use of hormones. For many of us, this model has been profoundly traumatising. Our efforts to significantly change this medical model have thus far been futile. This despite a constant self-narrative from intersex people right across the world of the damage and harm this model does to us humans, to our families. The international intersex movement had a major step change in May 2013, when the world's first international intersex organising forum took place in Brussels. The historic event was brought together 24 activists representing 17 intersex organisations from all continents. The event was organised and funded by ILGA, the International Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, Trans and Intersex Organisation. The forum agreed on the demands aiming to end discrimination against intersex people and to assure the right of bodily integrity and self-discrimination and self-determination, to put an end to the mutilating and normalising practices such as genital surgery. These international gatherings have continued, with the last and largest in Malta in 2013. And I want to take a moment to acknowledge that shift change moment that ILGA created, one in recognising intersex, adding I to the alphabet soup, but more in its determination to not speak on behalf of intersex people, rather its commitment and strategy that determined that intersex people needed to speak for themselves, more that the voice needed to be globally representative. We have tonight the Executive Director of ILGA, Renato. Renato is here to attend the first ever ILGA Oceania Conference, which will open at Whareoka on Wednesday evening. Renato, it seems very right that you're here to witness and be part of this historic human rights event this evening. A wonderful conference will be held at the Otago Medical School. Yes, the irony is not lost on me. Please go to the website and get more details of the conference. We're not sold out yet. There is an opportunity for late registrations. I want to also thank you, Rawa, my fellow ILGA Oceania board member. It was Rawa who had the mad idea to bring our conference to Wellington after the original proposal for Auckland hit an impossible roadblock. We had only 8 months to organise the conference out of nothing. No funding, no structure. The fact we have done so is solely due to the extraordinary efforts of the local LGBTI community and its allies, and I thank you so much. Finally, tonight is an honouring, a celebration. But I want to make a plea that we use this event to launch a renewed vigour and a determination to change the things that are not right in our community. I am a mental health professional. If you look at the stats, even the most privileged members of our community do not reach health equivalency with their cisgendered heterosexual counterparts. Reason: discrimination, hate, prejudice, homo, transphobia, minority stress does damage. Go out into the margins, into the less visible, the less recognised, supported members of our community, and the stats are horrifying. In our schools, yes, there is improvement, but we still have systemic rates of bullying and lack of support. Very few of our nation's schools are safe places for our community. Our youth suicide statistics are one brutal indicator. Our prisons in New Zealand have never been safe places for our community. That has to change. We have significant access issues to safe, respectful healthcare in so many areas. We still operate on tiny intersex infants. There is still inadequate LGBTI training, diversity awareness, basic information in many of our major government institutions. In fact, in some areas in recent years, I would suggest we've gone backwards. Yes, there have been gains, but they're not enough. We must not stop. The LGBTI community as a whole represents 12% of the population. We have nowhere near access to 12% of the nation's resources. The reform must go on. While we have people dying, members of our community with no sense they belong, access to safe, healthy housing, work, a sense of trust, of feeling safe, free from violence, feeling heard, valued, respected, or have any hope for a dignified, purposeful life and a sense of future, we have failed. It's not time to go home yet. There is lots to be angry about, disappointed and frustrated. There is work to do, lots of work to do. Thank you. Ngā mihi nui.
So I will be very quick. Firstly, this is an important occasion. It's 30 years and 30 years since the homosexual law reform, and I just really want to say thank you to everybody that's been involved in the community. I want to acknowledge the fact that we were gifted a fire. We really are looking at this conference to be able to reignite the fires and the passions and take the issues forward. So my challenge is to the politicians is please listen to what people are saying tonight. And the future politicians in the room, because I'm sure there's plenty of you here. Listen to the stories, come to the conference, join in the discussion, and please be change agents for our community.
Now, you know what? We've got some fabulous two more speakers. Can we do two more speakers? Can we do that? These people are the people you need to know. They've got all the money in the world. They're the ones that have stepped up graciously and supported Wellington Pride Week. They've supported the festival, the parade, our little soirée ce soir. As they say in French, est-ce que j'ai pu avoir la partie des étendues à mon chanson et pour vous, can't do it without money. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to introduce you to the lady that's speaking on behalf of ANZ. Where is she, my loves? She's gone home. She's gone out to have a cigarette. Nope, here she comes. Big round of applause, my love. This is Antonia Watson. She is actually my stunt double in the next Xena Once Were Warrior movie. As you can see, we're both blonde. We're both size 10. Thank you, Andrea.
It's actually silver, unfortunately. Tēnā koutou katoa. Ngā mihi ki tēnei pō whakahirahira. Kia ora tātou. For those who don't know me, I'm Antonia Watson, Chief Financial Officer of ANZ New Zealand, and I'm Executive Sponsor of ANZ's Pride Network. I'm very humbled and honoured to be here as we celebrate and reflect on this milestone, and I'd really like to acknowledge all the incredible people who have shared stories tonight. The courage, spirit and determination that you've shown is an inspiration to us all. I'd also like to acknowledge our host, the Rainbow Parliamentary Network, Team Out Wellington and co-chair and festival director Adrian Gerling and co-chair Karen Harris. And of course Fran Wild and all like her who have fought for fundamental human rights. One of the reasons I was lucky enough to be invited here tonight is that we paid for the drinks. Unfortunately, they've been packed up, but never mind. But seriously, ANZ has been a long-standing supporter of the Pride community in Wellington. And once again, we're very pleased to be sponsoring Out in the Park, and we're also thrilled to bring back our fabulous GayTMs. For every non-ANZ customer that uses their card in a GayTM, we donate $1 to Outline, a non-profit counselling service for people dealing with gender and sexuality issues. Last year we were able to donate more than $6,000, which I think is great in a country where people will walk a mile to avoid other bank ATM fees, like my husband. But I'd like to write a much bigger cheque this year, so please encourage your friends and family to use GayTMs where possible. And while our GayTMs are a public statement in support of Pride, a huge part of our campaign is actually about our staff and encouraging an environment where people feel comfortable being themselves at work. I'd like to make a very special shout out to our very own Lucretia St. Redfern, who I can't see. Oh, yes.
I'll just stand here.
It's a measure of how far we've come when I think about ANZ's Pride activities today. Thinking back 30 years, who would have imagined that the biggest bank in the country, a typically stuffy and conservative organisation, would have so many staff and their families marching in the Pride parade? Or that they would turn ATMs into GayTMs or ANZ into GayNZ, or become a major sponsor of the famous Sydney Mardi Gras? And who would have imagined that gaining Rainbow Tick accreditation is now an essential part of HR performance measures? Some people did imagine this. These things happen now because of those people, many of whom are here in this room, who bravely push for change and continue to do so today. So on behalf of ANZ, I want to offer our congratulations on your achievements. It's truly an honour and a privilege to be invited here tonight, and we look forward to working together with the Pride community for many more years to come. Nō reira, tēnā koutou, kia ora tātou katoa.
How delicious was she? Did you think she was actually me? You did, didn't you? Now, you know another woman we should all be proud of. I stood very tall and screamed loudly in a little flea voice that only fleas could hear because I'm a lady. I would like to present you now our Mayor of Wellington. She is, now just to let you all know, just in case y'all don't know, the Mayor erected a rainbow-coloured flag. Hold on, I'll say it again. The Mayor erected a rainbow-coloured flag. In honour of Pride Week, ladies and gentlemen, be upstanding. Celia Wade Brown, upstanding, please. Upstanding. Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Ngā mihi o tēnei pō, parliamentary hosts, former mayor and MP. I put it the other way around, Fran. It's great to be part of something that was started so long ago and has sort of just made such a difference in this city and in this country. I'd also like to acknowledge Georgina's had to go, but the fact that she was both a mayor, the first trans mayor and MP, she was awesome too. So Kiwis and international activists, thank you for inviting me to be here. And let's thank the ratepayers for supporting Out in the Park, the week-long Pride Festival and these activities. And thanks to my lovely staff. It's going to sound bad. It wasn't a personal erection. Okay. I have to thank the staff who hold up the flag on the town hall. We have a lot of fun with flags. We've got a rainbow flag flying. Woo! And it is a pretty welcoming city, but it's still not great. I was just reminded because we do try to have, the all-gender loos. And I remember there was quite a furore about, oh my goodness, we're not going to have dark and dangerous corridors and anyone can go in without trying to be a sort of binary decider about where they're going to go to the loo. And even now, there is a workplace in Wellington where the manager's fairly forward-thinking, said, well, these are everybody's loos. But people have gone up and stuck. This is a male loo. This is a female loo. Because they weren't comfortable with that kind of inclusion in a what one might have thought was a reasonably progressive workplace. So, you know, I make it my point to go to the Tane sign. Another little gender issue, but it's all symbolic. What a row there was, don't believe everything you read, but what a row there was about the traffic lights. Now, I'm sorry, but dear NZTA, I do not regard a testosterone-enhanced, very broad-shouldered male stick figure as necessarily the only representative of the human shape. And to actually get Kate Shepherd up was one thing, but we're now going for Carmen. Sadly, the first design had a snake, and while NZTA may move a little about the human figure, they said, no animals! So we've got to do a little bit of a redesign there. But those are the sorts of things that make it actually fun to do the right thing as well, and we have to have some fun, and that's one of the reasons that I just love the fact that Out in the Park has expanded to the whole week, and we're going to have a lot of fun, a lot of dancing, a lot of singing, and a lot of sequins. But there's some fairly serious things happening in this week as well, and there's a lot of struggles to overcome. One of the things is, as Marnie mentioned in particular, it's really sort of obvious for this country to condemn female genital mutilation, but there needs to be the same outcry about forced medical normalisation as well. We are all different. We are who we are, and we should be able to make those choices when we're ready. And just to say, Rawa and Marnie, also awesome job with ILGA. We need to use our leadership internationally. It's wonderful that there's been 30 years of homosexual law reform here, but there's still more than 70 countries internationally where it's still illegal to be gay. And that's not good enough. And if we are the lead, if we're the capital of this wonderful free society, and it's not that, you know, there's still a lot to do, we need to light that fire. Thank you, Tabby. We need to light that fire internationally. We're not just the world's top dozen livable city because we've got nice views and a reasonable economy. We are one of the world's top livable cities because we are diverse and because we love being diverse and because we're going to recognise and welcome that diversity. So be loud, be proud, and I declare the Pride Festival officially open!
Do you know what? I don't know about you all, but I'm clapping again. I'm going to have to send that, take myself to Thailand and get the finished product. Huge round of applause for our gracious, gracious mayor. Thank you so much. Rana. Thank you. At the back, thank you. The reason why I'm doing that is because I'm trying to wake you all up. Now I'm going to introduce you to my husband. He doesn't know it yet. We haven't canoodled as yet. Give me 5 minutes in a black leotard looking like Beyonce. Ladies and gentlemen, Grant Robertson.
If I'm any later home tonight, I'll be divorced by Alf anyway, so you might be on, Amanda. I am the last person to speak before Adrian and Karen, the two chairs of the Out Wellington. And you've all been here a very, very long time tonight, and I thank you for your fortitude in being here. I just want to say three things. The first of those is that we do stand on the shoulders of giants, and we've seen that tonight. And I, as a person who was 14 years old when homosexual law reform went through the New Zealand Parliament, I was a terribly geeky young boy in Dunedin, and I cut out from the newspaper who voted for and who voted against the homosexual law reform bill. And I've still got that piece of paper today. But for those who did support it, to Fran, to Trevor, to Bill, to the whole team of people, another heartfelt thank you on behalf of all of us tonight. So thank you for what you've done. Secondly, to take up the challenge of new generations, I want to take up the point that was made very articulately, particularly by Bella, that we are talking about communities and people in our communities who still need our help. And the challenge that is there for all of us is to take what we've learned from the past and offer that up. And I really take your point, Bella, about being the person who always has to speak. We all have to share the fact that while we've made enormous progress in 30 years, there are still challenges to be met, still people to be supported. And as a community, we owe it to one another to be there for the next generations. And so, Bella, I want to make my commitment, and I hope on behalf of others who've come before as well. And then finally, just to say that it is a great pleasure to be in a city like Wellington, where we do celebrate all our different communities, all the different people who are part of here. Out Wellington has done a terrific job in pulling this together. It is a fantastic week. Please be a part of it. And please be a part of a city where we put above else all other things our kindness to each other. I'd like to make that the thing that we do as a city, that we are kind to one another, to support each other and be proud of who we are as a city. Kia ora tātou.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, because he said be kind, I hope you're going to be kind, Daddy. Just letting him know. Ladies and gentlemen, we have been privileged. We have created a historic moment tonight, being part of the 30th anniversary for the remembrance of the Homosexual Law Reform Act. I'd like to take this opportunity, before I pass it on to the committee, to thank my cohorts, Adrian and Marcella, for putting this event together, for doing their most amazing triple somersaults backwards and calling themselves Nadia Comaneci while they're eating peanut butter and doing their nails. Huge round of applause for those two ladies, please. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank everyone that walked before me so that I can be me. I'd like to thank Bella and our youth for showing me that I can be an even better person, because they already are. I'd like to thank you all for your patience and your diligence, your honesty in terms of coming here to show that you care. As Grant says, let Wellington City be a city of caring. And as our gorgeous mayor has represented publicly, she's here to support us. Let's be who we are meant to be, ladies and gentlemen. We don't need Oprah Winfrey or Maya Angelou. We've got our auntie here, Elizabeth. She'll tell us what to do, kare. Kia ora koutou mō tēnā. Kia ora, kia ora. Ladies and gentlemen, I now hand it to the people that are going to make this week fabulous, to the Out Committee, to the Out in the Park Committee, the Wellington Committee. Let's just meet the committee, shall we? Ladies and gentlemen, be upstanding for our committee.
I just want to say that I am completely overwhelmed right now. This has been a few months in the making this evening, and I am so happy that you stuck around until the end. I know we went over time, but the idea for tonight was first to launch the Wellington Pride Festival, Tu Whakahihi e Te Whanganui Atara. which I thank Mayor Celia Wade Brown for officially launching just a moment ago. But this year we really took on sort of the weight of this year. Karen and I are the co-chairs of At Wellington Inc., which put on Out in the Park, and this year decided to put on this festival, and also the Wellington Pride Parade for the second year. And this is the wonderful members of the At Wellington board this year. We have so many other volunteers, and Tim here, who isn't officially an At Wellington member, has put together the entire program for the festival, so he really needs to be acknowledged. But on top of just saying, hey, let's have a festival, let's open it, we just thought this year marks the 30th anniversary since the homosexual law reform was passed. It's also the 30th anniversary since the first gay and lesbian fair that Des Smith first organized to lobby against the law, or to lobby for the law reform. And we just took the responsibility to really honor that, and we really wanted to have a forum where we reflected on and remembered what happened 30 years ago and prior. But also, let's not forget that there are still many issues facing our community today, and so we just really wanted to have a diverse representation of speakers, and I didn't think that any of them needed to be silenced or shortened, so I'm thankful that you've all stuck around to this point, because we all needed to hear everything that they had to say, and they all brought different perspectives, and they are, you know, just many things that we need to do, but we also need to celebrate. We need to celebrate how far we've come. We have a 9-day festival coming up, starting now. Starting today, we have 9 days of really diverse, really weird variety of events, because yeah.
When you're talking about the 9-day festival, my love.
Yes.
Could it have anything to do with this sitting on your seat? How would you like to have a brochure?
I'm just like So we've got a lot of events going on in this 9 days, and the two other really major events that we're organizing as a committee are the Wellington Pride Parade and Out in the Park, which is a 30th anniversary of Out in the Park next Saturday. And Karen has really been, I've been the one doing all sorts of stuff for this opening ceremony, and I've been, you know, talking to the media and that sort of thing. But Karen has really been doing
the scaffolding and toilets.
Exactly. So I'll let her talk to you a little bit about the parade and the fair.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm not sure I can add much to what Adrian has said, really, but we're really looking forward. Obviously, we've got the 9 days of lots of events over the festival week, but really, the Out in the Park Fair is still very much the flagship event that was started 30 years ago, and we hope that we're still doing it justice now. So this year it will be in Waitangi Park. We aren't going to be rained off. And we have also got the parade, which we really, really want to see lots of you in this year. So this will be the first time for a number of years that we've had such a large parade. So we're really looking forward to seeing you there next Saturday. We've got a whole day of entertainment, 7 hours of full entertainment, loads of stalls, and just loads of general fun going on for the whole day. And really, I just want to thank all of these guys again who've worked so hard all year on getting the fair and the festival up and running for this week. So thank you all.
And that's actually the last thing we're going to say, except let's all go to S&M's and have a party and start this festival. Please join us.